This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.
If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Call in now with your gardening questions. 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. Now, here are your Garden Talk hosts, Ken, David, Mark, and George.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. And Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman, we're going to be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, gents.
I'm good.
I am too.
Clear morning. The sun, the light was already on the horizon when I left the house at 5 o'clock this morning.
By the time I got to Miramar, you could see the sun starting to come up, but it was cloudy.
I saw one star to the east as I looked off the property as I drove away, but everything to the west was cloudy.
Yeah, I didn't see anything.
I know you live in a much better place. You're paying higher rates for clear skies.
Yes, I am, and I believe that star you saw off in the distance was a planet.
It may have been. You know. I saw a heavenly body. How about that? Not knowing what it was.
Excellent. And I saw a satellite go over. I'm thinking.
Oh, that was probably a space station.
Well, that's what I thought, but I don't. Do you get the alert still?
You have to sign up every year. You rotate off of the list.
I've rotated off, and yeah. I just happened to look up. It was one of the first clear mornings we've had, and there she were.
You know, out of all the. That's the only notification, email notification that I have that does not automatic, does not keep you on
it stays
on
for
in
the
perpetuity.
Rest of your life, right?
Yeah,
no,
you have to opt into it every year.
I thought I was doing that, but I'm guessing it was the Vandenberg launch one, or the launch alert is the one that just has you, they send you the email to do it. I must have missed the spot the station.
Well, no, they don't send you anything. No, you just rotate off.
Okay, so that's not very nice.
No, it's not.
I guess normal people would get tired of seeing the space station over and over and over again, but it fascinates me.
Yeah,
like lava effusing from Kilauea. It's supposed to be a nice week. We're supposed to have...
It has been a nice week the last few days.
Seasonably cool temperatures and warm up as the week progresses.
But sunshine
on my shoulders makes me happy.
I love it.
Have we seen any stories about all the sunshine we've had and how that the demeanor, the psyche of people in San Diego has improved now that the sun came out? I heard.
No, I only heard about it. I only heard it.
You just saw it in me, right? You just noticed it in me at work.
Yeah, my sister keeps asking about you. She's really worried. Are you okay?
I'm doing much better now.
Weather,
life is much better.
Okay, good. All right.
I have a great life, but I need that sunshine.
Cindy, it's just George. Let it go. It's no big deal.
Let it go.
Let's see. We do have classes today in both stores in San Diego. It's going to be the repeat of the Plumeria Care and Culture class with Mike Atkinson, which was very
well attended
in Poway last week. So I would definitely get there early if you want to make sure you get a seat. That's at 9 o'clock in San Diego. At 9:30 in Poway, it's going to be Bonsai Basics with Richard Wright, another very popular class. So I would get there early to get a seat. Next Saturday, there are no classes scheduled. Well, there's no classes scheduled in Poway. I don't think they're having any in Point Loma either. July 4th, both stores are going to be closed on Tuesday, July 4th. So plan ahead if you're going to work in the yard on Tuesday. You may want to come in on Monday to pick up stuff. And then classes resume on July 8th. San Diego is to be determined, but in Poway, it's going to be composting with Tyler Trimble, also another very popular speaker. So I can't believe June is pretty much over at this point.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Halfway through the
year.
Halfway through the year already.
And the days have already gotten shorter.
Starting to, yeah. They definitely Definitely are. Let's see. There's not.
They
much...
definitely are. Come on, it's the first week of summer. We just had the longest
today,
day.
Today, the sun is going to. There's going to be 0.07 seconds less sunlight today. You're going to notice it when you go home.
You know, and that depression is going to keep spreading throughout
keep
the community.
Spreading.
Oh, let's see. In July, there's nothing going on for this last week in Balboa Park. But in July, on the 8th, it's the San Diego Cactus and Succulent Society meeting, show, and sale. That's going to be going on just on the 8th. Okay. Then the 14th, 15th, and 16th is the San Diego Dahlia Society annual show and sale, which should be a pretty spectacular show. There's so many different varieties of dahlias and so many different sizes, from little golf ball sized ones all the way up to the dinner plates, which are 10 to 12 inches across. And then if you want a turtle or a tortoise, 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, it's the San Diego Turtle and Tortoise Society summer show and sale. And then at the end of the month, the 28th, 29th, and 30th, San Diego Orchid Society summer show and sale, which would definitely be worth going to see, because you will see stuff there that you don't get to see
unless
during the other seasonal shows that they have.
Unless you're at the San Diego Botanic Garden. During their shows. Never done.
But that's a good segue. The San Diego Botanic Garden in July 1st, which is almost here, they have Savage Gardens. It's called The Real and Imaginary World of Carnivorous Plants. And so that should be, if you're a carnivorous plant person, that should be a very good show, or exhibit, rather.
What if you're not a carnivorous plant
then
person?
Then don't go. Go look at something else.
You sure?
Yeah.
Don't you think lay people would enjoy the carnivorous plants,
sure,
even
would,
if they hadn't thought
I
about it?
I don't know. They might find it interesting.
They would.
Yep. Okay. Well, so would you retract that last statement, please?
I need the court to read it back to me so
All
I can
right,
retract
we'll just
it.
Go.
Are they
going
to
do that in the conservatory, I imagine?
I would assume so. Maybe John can update us on that, but I believe so.
Yeah. Should be. They do put on a good show up there.
I just found out they are. Yes, it'll be in there.
Doesn't matter what
it's true.
What
whatever
they do,
they're doing,
whatever
they do a great
they
job.
Do a very,
they
very
do
nice
it very
job
well,
of it.
Yes.
I was walking through the cactus section the other day in Poway. Did you see the Cirrus peruviana spirals that we got?
I did.
Are spectacular. They're really, really neat. It's a Cirrus peruviana, which is a relatively common cactus.
Upright fence post type.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But these things are corkscrewed like you wouldn't believe. I mean, I've never seen a plant twist that much.
I hear that they do that by putting them on a potter's wheel and spinning it really slowly, and they just grow them on that in the rotating pattern, and that causes them to corkscrew like that.
Well, that
no,
you,
I'm totally,
I was
going
to say, you hear that, or
I'm
did you make that up?
Totally
as you were
making
there?
That up as
well,
I was sitting
because,
here.
Because you know, like with cycads. When they start to put out a new whorl of foliage, if they get rotated, the foliage gets all screwed up.
That's what made me think about.
Yeah,
there are some plants that will do that, so I just made it up.
Yeah,
isn't that what we're supposed to be here to?
Sounds
to,
reasonable
to make things up. No,
we try not.
I liked
to.
It. I was visualizing it. You know, I was about to ask what the rotation rate is. You know, every 7 days it rotates. How do you do that?
Yes, it's like sands through the hourglass.
Slipping.
So are the days
of
our
lives.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to go. Yeah. Mr. Soap Opera Man.
Thank you. That was not my soap opera.
They have some serious snail issues back in Florida right now. They put a quarantine in an area. I think it's in Broward.
I believe so.
Miramar is the name of the town. They have found giant African snails back there. And they showed a picture of it, of one, and it's about the size of a softball. It's sitting in the person's hand. And there's about 500 plants that they will feed on. And then...
But if the plants aren't there, there are other things they might attack.
They will eat the stucco off of
your
house
to
get the calcium for their shells.
And one of the articles I had read indicated that they have a point at the end of their shell that it can pierce a tire. So if you drive over one, you may pierce a tire.
Holy cow.
Now, I don't know if that was hyperbole, but that was in the article that was citing all the stuff Ken just mentioned.
The other problem is that they carry...
That's not hyperbole. I'm serious.
They carry a parasite that can cause meningitis in humans. So you don't want to be.
So no, it's not escargot.
Florida takes their snails very seriously, and remember when we shipped that stuff to Florida, it had to go to an intermediate state for quarantine.
Yeah.
Before it went into Florida, and that was just for the brown snails. They wanted to make sure they didn't get. And look what they got instead.
Yeah, I don't know how they have it. Because they are indigenous to, I think it was Nigeria was where I saw. But, yeah.
I wonder if somebody brought one in as a pet and let it go, or if in soil, eggs or something. I wonder what size the eggs are for those.
I don't know.
I was gonna mention to you guys, did you guys hear about the crazy story that's going in Nevada, whatever you want to call it personally, but there's thousands and thousands of crickets all over different areas of Nevada, and they're known as Mormon crickets, and it's just a huge infestation over there. It's really, really bad.
None of the news yesterday.
I heard crickets. I didn't hear that.
chirp.
Sorry.
I had not heard of that. I wonder if they're like cicadas, where it's a cyclical thing where they come out every few years or something.
But they did mention that this is the worst they had it in quite some time, for sure. It is a seasonal thing where there will be some crickets here and there, but this is, I'm talking like it's covering houses. Like,
oh my word.
Yeah. It, like you said, it looks like cicadas basically in that seasonal time during Florida. It is that bad in those areas. So they're looking to the city to see what they can do to help with this horrible infestation problem over there. So crazy time for bugs these days.
Yeah.
How do we decide which bugs to get rid of and which ones not to?
Good question.
I had read
Philosophy 101.
I'm thinking to start eating crickets or something.
They do that already.
Yeah.
I had read, it was just a little story that somebody had posted that said that they were sitting by their campfire and a cicada came out and saw what was going on and immediately jumped in the fire after spending the last 17 years in the ground. We haven't had when was the last time they had a big cicada? That was last year, I think, wasn't it? That they were predicting a big cicada invasion? Because I know Katie was getting a little freaked out about it.
Katie did?
Yeah, back in North Carolina, she was a little concerned about it.
You know, you would think the way I play with this stuff that I would know that and care, but I don't really. Is it
you
because
don't care?
It doesn't affect us? Yeah. I mean, I'm the king of things that nobody cares about, and so this would be right up my alley. Why have
the,
I
the crickets or the snails or
no both? I'm thinking the crickets and cicadas and all of that stuff.
And probably because it doesn't happen here.
That must be it. I remember visiting Prescott, visiting Jim, and having all the, I think they're cicadas, making all the noise in the trees.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
In Ohio, it's crazy, too.
That's one thing that I've noticed lately. You don't hear, at least in my neighborhood, you don't hear crickets that much anymore.
They're in Nevada right now.
Well, I guess they all went gambling.
Big convention.
Yeah. It's a cricket convention.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back. With more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ, I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. And we were talking about the carnivorous plant show, which is a month of August.
The one at the Botanic Garden, the Savage Gardens, is 1 July through October 29th in the conservatory, the Dickinson Family Education Conservatory.
Okay.
Which 1 July? The upcoming one?
Yeah, the one that's coming up in a week or so. Yeah, that one.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
And for more information on carnivorous plants and the Carnivorous Plant Society here in San Diego, we're going to go talk to Hong in Mira Mesa. Good morning, Hong. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Doing well. What's going on with the Carnivorous Plant Society these days?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm calling from San Diego Carnivorous Plant Society. We're here, and our upcoming, as you mentioned, our upcoming show and sell is going to be August 5th and 6th in Balboa Park. That's in Casa del Parado, room 101.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we have our general meeting today that is going to be held at 10 a.m., in Casa del Parado, room 104.
Oh, excellent.
And so you have a monthly meeting, and is it open to non-members?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Our meeting is every other month, actually. Well, during the summer months, we do have it every month. And the meetings are usually 2 hours long, open to general public. We usually try to put on some kind of programming, some kind of talk or demo, talking about repotting, how to make divisions from cutting, how to grow, you know, in San Diego, our specific climate. And we also encourage members or general public to bring any plants that they want to show and also sell any extras that they may have.
Oh, excellent. Sounds like a nice way to spend a morning in Balboa Park, especially if you have an interest in carnivorous plants. And I have noticed over the past few years that there has been a uptick right. in interest in carnivorous plants.
Agreed.
A lot. And the availability is much, much better than it used to be. It used to be the only thing you could get on a regular basis was Venus flytraps. But now there's all kinds of stuff.
Including available. The hanging pitchers.
The hanging pitchers, the terrestrial pitchers. Sundews, there's all kinds of stuff that's available now.
Yeah. There's a lot of more options you can buy online, or you can buy from, you know, your local society or clubs like us. And also, you know, show and sells.
Yeah.
Those are pretty large events, get a lot of attendance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your show and sale again is August 5th and 6th?
Yeah, so that's right.
Okay, so a little over a month away, be worth going to see for sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Of course.
All right, Hong. Thank you very much for getting up this morning and calling in. We appreciate it. Hopefully, you'll see some new faces at your meeting today, and if not, at your show come August.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Take care. Might be worth
It'll
going
be,
to see.
Absolutely,
you know,
it would be.
You know, because it's kind of like the Orchid Society. You see, in stores, you see the same things. You see, right. you see Cendrobiums, here. You see Phalaenopsis, you see a few Paphiopedilums here, there, some Oncidiums. But you go to a show and sale, and people that are hobbyists, I don't know where they get this stuff from, but they get it from all over the place, and you see stuff that you will never see in a retail store.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, just in our carnivorous plant bog in Poway, it's a neat little carnivorous plant bog. But Tom would always bring in his own specimens or his big Venus flytrap specimen, that giant plant, and have it there on display during the summer. And it would probably be neat to go to their meeting this morning because I'm sure people are going
to
bring in display
stuff
plants.
Right.
And
yeah.
even the common ones, when they get bigger,
What's neat is to watch the common ones flower. I mean, our Venus flytraps in our bog have been flowering for the last month or so. Our sundews are flowering right now, and our big pitcher plants are all flowering. So it's really neat to watch that, and you don't typically think of carnivorous plants flowering, and so it's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. The bog is pretty cool, and it's pretty much in full sun.
It is in full sun. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
So the biggest thing is keeping them wet.
The phrase bog is important.
Yes.
Oh, what does it mean, George?
So we keep that thing very wet.
Yeah. 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 If you want to give us a call today, 888-344-1170 is the number. Let's see. What else do we have going on? Still have a lot. We have tons of native milkweed available right now. Probably more than I've seen ever
I mean, totally agree.
And as you mentioned last week, the volume of, I mean, the plants that we have this year, or this season rather, are much bigger than we've had in the past as well. Mm-hmm. Not only that we have a lot, but they're bigger and healthier looking plants.
But you know what I have not seen a lot of as of yet?
I know what you're going to say.
Is monarchs.
I saw a lot of butterflies fluttering around my yard 2 days ago. It's warm.
Are
they're
monarchs?
Emerging now, and because it's warming up, they're completing their life cycle. So keep your eyes peeled. I think as the weather continues to warm, you'll see more and more.
I think so. I have some friends that live down near the college area, and they said their monarchs are just now starting to hatch. So they're out there. It's just been, at least out in Poway, it's been a little cold and a little chilly, and they just are not.
I've noticed quite a few at my house in the last few days. It surprised me, but I didn't think about it till you just brought it up. It's got to be the sun.
George.
The only thing.
Very much. Very similar.
George still showed up even when it was cold. I mean,
just dressed more warmly.
Exactly.
Was walking through the yard yesterday and saw something that I hadn't seen before. The bushy wisterias. Have you seen that?
I now that you say that, yes.
It was bushy wisteria kofuji is the name.
Same to you.
It's the foliage looks just like a wisteria, but it's only each leaflet is only about an inch and a half or 2 inches long, and it's really, really fine.
Does it stay that way?
I believe so. Yeah, it stays very small, and it has purple. It's not blooming right now, but it has purple flowers on it that are very fragrant, just like regular wisteria.
And that flowers a month ago or something.
That's what I'm guessing. We got those in from Suncrest. And and Suncrest is going out of business.
Are they?
They're closing up. Yep.
Last orders COD this week, and
then they're going to be gone. Unfortunately, they were a very good supplier, and they were one of the few nurseries that we had left that grew unusual stuff. So that leaves us basically with San Marcos and Monterey Bay, but right. San Marcos is disappearing too. They're going away in a few years. So it's all going to be taken over by...
You're such a downer.
I know.
By housing,
yeah. Ridiculous amounts of housing. So, it's a neat plant. You should, if you're in the store, check it out. And so I think they were in the, Agapanthus bed.
I saw them down there.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss their Suncrest camellias. They had some neat varieties of camellias that you don't see. The Mino Nohari and some of these other things that we had at my dad's house. And they're varieties that nobody else is growing anymore. And now nobody else is going to be growing them anymore.
Even more or less.
who's the camellia grower?
Nuccio.
And I had heard that there's a possibility that they may be going out too. So it's unfortunate, but in Southern California, the price of the land is just it's getting ridiculous. You can't it doesn't make sense to do what they're doing.
You have to do it.
Love.
You want to do it as a charity.
You had mentioned the lack of monarchs. We've noticed a lack of hummingbirds. We put up hummingbird feeders, and they're just not coming the way they used to. So I did some research, and there are a couple articles, one in the UT a couple days ago, that cited there's such an abundance of plant material out there because of all the rains that the birds don't need your nectar. So they're very happy with...
So they're fair weather birds?
They are. They're fair weather. That's what the articles alluded to, that there's plenty out there. So, they'll eventually start coming to your feeders again. But right now, there's plenty for them to just forage on.
Interesting.
Yeah, we've got a big circular planter right outside off the patio that I had put in a bunch of sages and things, sages and milkweeds and things like that for hummingbirds and a butterfly garden. And I haven't seen either.
Well, interestingly, we have a bunch of salvias in the front of our house, and we do have a lot of hummingbirds that, well, not a lot, we have hummingbirds that come to it, but not the volume that we're coming to the the feeders in the back during the course of the summers when it's a little bit, you know, drier and nectar is less abundant.
Mm-hmm. It just amazes me how many salvias are available now.
I think there's about 1,000 species of salvias.
Was that before they absorbed rosemary? 1,001
now with rosemary, right?
Yeah.
The Russian sage too, right?
Paroskia,
right? Yeah. So 1,002 maybe.
Well, there was one on the Moosa Creek table that I saw that kind of grabbed my interest. I'm going to have to do a little more research into it. But the black sage,
the Mellifera.
It's a beautiful plant.
It is.
They're not in bloom right now, so I don't know what the flower is going to look like. But it's a really, really pretty plant. Really dark green foliage. Very nice, upright looking plant.
The salvias we put in at the fair exhibit were beautiful as well.
What salvias did we put in at the fair? Cleveland.
Cleveland's, yeah.
The native one.
Yes.
Chickering's, right?
Allen Chickering and Knot. We ate two types.
Right. Yeah, they were beautiful. And we put some Appiana into the white sage, which is very fragrant, but I don't think quite as pretty, but very fragrant.
Very. Very fragrant.
Very, yeah. If you want something white in your garden, but you don't want Dusty Miller, that's a good choice for you.
Right.
Because it is white. But, man, it is.
It's a strong sage.
It's really strong. Yeah, it is really, really strong. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We're going to take a quick break. Alan and Bob, stay on the line. We're going to be talking to you when we come back.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back.
Don't end that song prematurely.
We'll be dancing to that song later, Capri.
You listen to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We are going to go to the phones. We are going to head out and talk to Alan in Point Loma. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Just fine. Good morning. Well, I have a question today for you guys.
Certainly.
It's about my avocado tree, or trees.
Okay.
I have one that's very old from the 1930s, and it's in the ball, and then one that came from the seed from that same tree, and it's very tall and shoots straight up. And this year, when both trees flowered, there aren't any fruit left. All the flowers disappeared without any setting any fruit. It's unbelievable. I've never seen this.
It could be related to timing of the flowering with the rains and things like that. Other things that would cause no fruit to set would be stress on the trees after the flowers. Did you happen to notice bee activity on the trees when they were blooming?
No. This year there doesn't seem to be as many bees.
Well, it's been very, very cool, and they don't get out and don't like it. And so now that the weather's warming up, it should help. It's not going to help if there's no flowers there. But
yeah, because I was looking at a couple of the areas where the flowers were on the newer tree, and there would be a bunch of flowers coming out in a cluster, and there would be a lot. I mean, it was way more than the older tree. And always this time of year, you'd see the very small avocados hanging down by the hundreds, and now there are zero.
Yeah, I would think.
And on the new one, the same thing. I looked and I see where the clusters were of the flowers, the little sprigs that come out, and everything's empty.
I would think, as David mentioned, with when they first started blooming, if we had a lot of rain, it was cooler, and the bees were not foraging, you probably did not get the pollination rates to give you the fruit.
Okay,
that's.
I you would think there'd be some, but for zero, it's unbelievable.
I actually believe it. I believe it. And I think the only thing that's different is that we had the very wet, cool spring. And unless there's something else that happened at your place that may have caused stresses or something, the only thing that makes sense is the pollination.
Yeah, because the stress, like the new leaves come out every year. And I have new leaves, a huge amount of new leaves. I mean, it's just covered everything in the tree. It's just both trees, just huge amount of leaves. Of fresh leaves came out in the spring, and so it couldn't have been under stress, or the new leaves wouldn't have come out the same way, and in such a quantity. I mean, it's like the old leaves fell off, and they turned brown, and a lot fall off. Not all, of course, but the new ones are just everywhere. It's just the whole tree's green and really looks fabulous, both trees. But the fruit was. I've never seen this ever. We've always had hundreds hanging off this time of year, small ones. You know, they should be about half an inch around or quarter inch, that sort of thing, all over the place. Because it takes a whole year for the fruit to come to fruition. Mm-hmm. You know, like I have some of the fruit from last year on the tree right now. You know, they get really big, and the balls get huge.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of them from last year. They're about ready to pick now. Usually, this time of year, they start becoming ripe.
Yeah, I think at this point, just make sure the trees are getting fed regularly. Make sure that as we start moving into the summer and things start heating up and drying out, make sure that they get an adequate amount of water. And next year, when they start to bloom again, if you don't see a lot of bee activity, one thing you can do is go out and when the flowers open, just kind of rub your hand around the clusters of flowers to get that pollen moving, and hopefully that will take the place of some of the pollinators. But it's kind of going to depend on what the weather is going to be like this year. This year was kind of an anomalous weather season for us, so.
I was wondering if the rains didn't wash it all away, the pollen, because they were so heavy and so much.
I would say that that's possible, yeah.
You know, that's the only thing I was thinking of, but yeah. I've never had this happen before, you know, in 50 years, and so I'm wondering what the heck.
Yeah, I think it was mostly weather-related, and hopefully that'll straighten out next year. Okay?
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Let's see. We're going to go talk to Bob in San Diego. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here this morning.
It's our pleasure. What can we do for you?
I have a question regarding making homemade insecticidal soap. In the past, I've always just used the Dr. Bonner's peppermint variety, but I watched a YouTube video recently where a gentleman used both the peppermint and tea tree variety of the Castile soap, but he also added some hydrogen peroxide and alcohol to the mix. And I'm wondering if there's any advantage to adding the additional ingredients to the insecticidal soap, or if the peppermint variety is adequate.
We're going to all look at each other here because when you are mixing up homemade remedies and recipes like that, strengths are going to vary. Potential conflicts with foliage are going to have all sorts of different things. And one of the most important parts of the products that we have, including insecticidal soap for sale at the nursery, is that they've been tested on plants. And the label gives you all of that information. And I have never made a homemade remedy I look around the table here. I would guess if anybody here has made a homemade remedy, it would be you, George. Have you made a homemade?
Yeah, just using Castile soap, which he, Dr. Bronner's, which he mentioned, which I've used. But I don't think I would add. I don't think I would add other things. I know alcohol can be effective. You dab it on scale on delicate plants, but I don't know if I would mix it.
If you want to try such a thing, I would encourage you to do so, but then only apply it in a small area of the plants and watch and see what happens. And we're about to have a warm week, which should give you a pretty quick understanding of how it affects the plants in case there's some phytotoxicity or something that would happen.
Yeah, and you know, with the hydrogen peroxide that you can get off the shelf is usually only about 5%, but hydrogen peroxide is a very, it's an oxidizer and it can burn. I would be very cautious about using any kind of hydrogen peroxide of any quantity in it myself.
Right. And then mixing things together, solutions. I don't know how effective it would be. Well, yeah. I mean, it may be effective, but I don't know how detrimental it might be to the plant. The biggest problem we have when people make their homemade soap remedies is they often may use a detergent, like a dish detergent, and then that really does cause problems on their plants.
Yeah, I've also seen people use vegetable oil as an oil spray, and that burned
the heck out of plants.
That did not turn out well. So
try it in a small area first. Yeah. Make a small batch and try it in a small area first.
All right. I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
One would think, knowing me, that would be something I would do, would just be to mix stuff up and start spraying it. But I haven't had that want or need to do so. I'd much rather take something off the shelf and not apply it to my plants.
Instead of make something and not apply it.
Yes, it's much easier.
Yeah. We have another caller on the line. We special guest calling in. It's Mark from Fringe Coffee. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for holding.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
We're doing well. I saw your plants in the Poway store yesterday.
They made it down, and
they are absolutely beautiful. What can you tell us about them?
Thank you. Well, what we delivered to you guys was a mixture of all of the plants that we grow. So we grow actually 5 varieties of Cafe Arabica coffee. So Cafe Arabica is the more prominent of the 2 types of coffee that you get out there. It tends to be also the coffee that is known for higher quality, grown in the coffee belt of the world. It's grown generally in areas that are sort of semi-tropical. Your other coffee, which is Cafe Robusta or Cafe Centiforia, it's grown truly as a tropical plant. So Cafe Arabica is quite nice because it can actually grow in California. So we grow coffee, and we have growers that grow coffee all the way from Santa Barbara to San Diego. And it's these 5 varieties that are being grown. So of those 5 varieties that we have one which is called Geisha or Geisha. It's well known around the world because there's a few when coffee is sold around the world, often it goes out in these auctions. And there's a few auctions that have happened in Panama that have really elevated the worldwide awareness and excitement about this variety, Geisha. And it's a great tasting coffee. It's different. If you like really, really dark or bitter coffee, Geisha is nothing like that. It actually is light. It's almost more tea-like. If anyone complains about the acidity, which is really bitterness in coffee, Geisha is nothing like that. So it's actually a great tasting coffee for someone that wants a lighter flavor drink.
For somebody who doesn't like coffee, Geisha would be perfect then, right?
Correct.
Yeah, your literature said it had aromas of jasmine and notes of peach. It sounds like a fine wine.
Correct. And in fact, all of these coffees tend to be better described as almost like wine where they have these flavor profiles. There's both a combination of the flavor profile from the plant itself, and then, of course, its growing conditions. So we have geishas that are grown in north of L.A. in the Santa Barbara area that taste slightly differently than those that are grown in the San Diego, Northern San Diego County area, which is also very interesting how you can see how, whether it's environmental factors, weather, things like that, as well as soil, can affect ultimately your end bean and that tasting, the tasting notes that are going to come out of the coffee. Roast definitely affects that. But since we're the ones roasting it, we try to control for that. And it ends up being just local factors that affect it, which is super interesting.
Can you hold on for our, can you stay with us? We took those calls ahead and we're up against a break. Can you stay on the line for the break and come back?
Of course.
Okay, stay on the line, Mark. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We were talking to Mark from Fringe Coffee before we left. And Mark, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
What were the other four varieties? I know, and I say geisha, but you're the coffee guy. I should not have, it's, how do you pronounce it?
It's geisha or gesha.
Gesha, so, okay.
Both pronunciations are fine. The original name comes from a region of Ethiopia, so it's spelled G-E-S-H-A, so it's pronounced Gesha, but it's added someplace along the way, it got this I added, and it's also said as Geisha. It's not referring to something Japanese, so that's why it's kind of funny that way, that some people will say Geisha and think of Japan, but that's actually not its origin.
Well, you did say it's delicate like tea, so it could have some.
Yes, you did say that.
George tie into Japan.
George was over here saying that coffee would never get a naval ship started, so he wants a more robust one. What is the most robust of the five varieties that you sent us?
Robust would probably be either Katsuai Rojo or Katuro Rojo. Both are dwarf varieties. Both tend to produce a lot, and that was actually their origins when they were bred, was to try to produce a lot of cherry, try to really get the growers to have a lot of production. They tend to be roasted a little bit more medium, and that'll get things going. There's still, all of these varieties tend not to be roasted dark. The reason for that is the darker you roast a coffee, you're really converting a lot of the sugars into different molecules that are going to taste a little bit more bitter. You're affecting the oils that are in the coffee. So generally, when you're dealing especially with higher-end coffees, you're really doing only a light to a medium roast. But you still have the caffeine that's there. That's actually people that think that you roast darker to get more caffeine. That's inaccurate. Now, it's also inaccurate to say that a lighter roast has more caffeine. By weight, there might be a slight adjustment, but generally speaking, caffeine content is driven by the variety, which is also a good segue into Larina, which is the fourth one that we sent you guys, and it naturally has about 50% of the caffeine content. So it's not going to get a naval ship going, not going to get anyone really excited or jittery, but it's a nice, great-tasting coffee with naturally half the caffeine content.
Now, I know we got a hold of you by butting into Kevin Grangetto's order, and he shared with us. And I know we can get them. We have them available at two Walter Anderson's locations and at Grand Jetto's up in Escondido. If somebody comes in and buys one, I set two aside, and I did not get a Geisha, but after listening to you, now I have to get a Geisha, so I'll have to get three. But where should I be planting them in the San Diego County region? Do they go out in the full sun? Do they go into the understory? Where would I plant this plant now?
So you don't want full sun. Understory would probably be better, or a place that gets sort of partial sunlight. And the reason for that is full sunlight, especially in the San Diego area, it just ends up drying the plants out too much. It gets a little, in the summertime, it gets just a little bit too hot, and the sun kind of tends to beat it down a bit. So you want either a little bit of shade or understory to another plant. All of these plants can get quite tall if left. So if you were never to prune, you would get 8 feet, 9 feet plus plant. So ultimately, you do want to do some pruning and adjust the structure of the plant a little bit. Keep it to maybe 6 or 7 feet, something that looks great, but you can also pick the cherries from. All of these do produce cherries in about 3 years, so you can be also tasting the difference between the varieties in the cherry. It's very much like any other fruit that way, that when the cherry is ripe, it's going to have a high sugar content, and you can actually taste sweetness when eating those coffee cherries. Inside the seed is the coffee bean. But again, you can eat the cherries as a raw fruit and then just dispose of your seed.
And what were the other three varieties that you, or actually two, you mentioned Lorena, Geisha, and somebody Rojo. What are the other two you brought us?
There are two Rojos.
Dos Rojos?
Yes.
Catuai Rojo and Catura Rojo. And the fifth variety is called the Pacamara. And Pacamara is a neat plant because it has very large leaves. I always like to think of it as almost like something you'd see out of the Triassic era or something like that. But it's got these nice big leaves, has nice big beans, great tasting. And so as a plant, it just is a very cool looking plant. So Geisha, as special as it is in terms of the coffee market, it as it grows, it tends to look a little bit wiry. It has large internodal spacing, so it sometimes can look a little bit sickly, whereas the other varieties look neat in there. And so obviously you can tell I enjoy plants when I'm talking about plants being neat. But the other ones just look, they all have a different look to them. So like Lorena has naturally smaller leaves, and they're very much more pointed. So it doesn't look like a traditional coffee plant. Catuai Rojo and Catura Rojo look more similar to each other, other than the fact that they're a dwarf variety, but that just means that they're not going to grow to 12 feet tall. They're only going to grow to 8 if you let them grow. And then Pacamara just has these really big leaves. And so that's why, in particular, if you're growing Pacamara, you don't want it in full sunlight. You do want to give it some shading. And if you've ever heard of like shade-grown coffee or things like that, this is why shade-grown coffee is successful in the coffee belt, is because Cafe Arabica, that particular species, doesn't like full sunlight, as opposed to, say, Robusta, which actually will prefer to be in more sun. It wants, Cafe Arabica wants to have some of that shading that's provided by other plants, or if you're planting it in a region of your garden that you know you're going to get some shade.
Well, normally when we get in coffee plants, it comes in from houseplant growers in small 4-inch or 6-inch pots, and they're about 6 inches tall. And what I noticed of these plants is they're closer to 2 feet. They look like real plants, and I am really looking forward to getting them planted. I just have to find the right morning sun or filtered sun, which I have the space that's also near water, so yeah. I make sure they get water. But the plants look fantastic. They're the nicest looking coffee plants we've gotten in years.
They really are.
We have a coffee plant growing in Poway, a single plant, and over the last year or so, it's looked gorgeous. But with the colder, damper winter we just had, it's struggling right now. It is in filtered light, and we're looking forward to it coming back.
Yeah, the plants themselves were absolutely outstanding. I had never thought about eating coffee beans or the cherries right off of the tree. So I mean,
I did, but I did it to get to the seeds because I thought I was going to get a buzz walking through the yard. It wasn't that exciting, but it didn't. You know, one coffee bean, I guess, doesn't do it.
I guess not.
No.
Mark.
Now, just a couple other things. You do want to worry about the cold, so don't plant it in an area that's going to be hit by frost. And don't overwater. Coffee does not like wet feet, so be careful about overwatering.
Good to know. Mark, we've got to take a break. Thank you very much for calling in, and thank you for supplying some absolutely beautiful coffee plants. Hopefully we'll get some people into either our stores or Kevin's to pick some up and give it a shot for themselves. Much appreciated. Have a great weekend, and thanks for calling
you
in.
Well.
Okay,
thank
take
you.
Care.
You guys as well.
Thanks. That's it for Garden Talk here this week. We do have garden classes today.
San Diego at 9 o'clock, we have Plumeria Care with Mike Atkinson. And in Poway at 9:30, Bonsai Basics with Richard Wright.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another hour of Garden Talk.
Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticulture news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew or want to learn more about the show, how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to askanexpert@walteranderson.com. That's askanexpert@walteranderson.com or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at this same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.
This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.